everything that I learn and everything that I know comes from Black women. My grandma being the first. And literally, like, the idea of what love can look like comes from my grandma, like a really caring love that she had, a really radical caring love that she carried my life with. Everything that I know about radical love of community comes from Black women, comes from the Black queer women that I have read. Think about, like, where I am and where I come from, that I always go back to. I see myself in this, you know, Black gay man in Stockholm, but also I'm Ethiopian and a queer in an Ethiopian context, in a Habesha context, what that looks like in the, within the community. And then and somehow navigating these different rooms, how I navigate, how I camouflage. I no longer do that anymore. You know, the way I see, like, how my strength have evolved, that I'm the same person in all of these rooms. And that is really a product of radical love that I have been, you know, that I have around me. As I mentioned, you know, Juliette Apple, who's a friend of mine and the co-founder, but also the Black women that we have, you know, I mean, just the other one behind me, Angela Davis, just to, you know, the people we read are those I look at, and I really just move on and I just continue. And I'm super tired. I'm done in many ways, but I will never, ever, ever not give up.
Good people, welcome to another episode of This Moment Podcast with myself, Jason Diakite, normally based in Stockholm, but today sitting in the south of France, and my man, Marcus Samuelson, my brother, who I think is in Harlem, USA. Today, dear listeners and friends, we have a very special guest. It is my honor to introduce to you the co-founder of Black Queer Sweden, one of the integral parts of Cinema Africa, the film festival that goes down in Stockholm every year, editor at Context Press, cultural producer, and big-time activist, Samuel Girma. Welcome, Samuel.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this moment. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. I feel really humble hearing those credentials or presentation of myself. It feels very humbling, really. Thank you so much for having me.
Samuel, if we take it back just a couple of weeks to right towards the beginning of June after the killing of George Floyd, what were you feeling in that moment?
Well, I was already tired, pretty much. I've been activist for the last... it also feels super strange to describe oneself as an activist, but, you know, when you do stuff, when you write, when you produce, when you make language, as Toni Morrison would say, you are being active. So I guess that's why I've been more comfortable describing myself as an activist. So I've been really tired, really, really tired. So when that moment occurred, it felt like I was going to lose it. And I was so happy that all Black people, millions of Black people across the world felt exactly the same. And that translated into a feeling of we're done. We are done kind of vibe. So I was really tired. And for the first days, I thought I was alone in that feeling. But little did I know that there would be millions, if not billions, of people that are feeling the same.
Explain for our audience, what does Black Lives Matter and activism look like in Stockholm, or not only in Stockholm, even more maybe interesting, like in the smaller towns in Sweden, what does it look like there?
I think there's also, in terms of Black Lives Matter, there in the Swedish context, there has always been this image of Sweden as this somehow the better anti-racist country compared to the United States, which is a complete false information, a very falsehood information. And if the measurement of a country is by comparing to what's worse, then I'm not gonna, you know, accept that result. So activism here looks like, in a way, that we are trying to, we've been trying for so long to put our Black experiences as Afro-Swedes, our Afro-Swedish experiences of racism, into the public discourse, bringing it to the public knowledge so that we are always in solidarity with our Black American siblings, but we are also bringing our issues here, which has been really easier said than done kind of vibe, because I think white Swedes prefer to know that United States is racist rather than knowing that Sweden is racist. Mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter activism here looks like that we are coming together, forming different groups, forming opinions. There are brilliant Black opinion makers that are literally writing our experiences. They are, and I think the power in the activists or in the writers and the opinion makers is that they are making sure that they're putting us in the map of the Swedish identity, that we, our experiences are also valid, that we're not seeking validation for our experiences anymore.
What would you say are some of the typically Swedish aspects of racism, anti-Blackness, that may not be the same in the United States as they are here? Because often in Sweden, you hear from regular people on the streets, but also journalists writing a lot that, well, the police, they don't murder people of color in Sweden, so it's not as bad here. What do you say to that?
These misconceptions are very integral part of the Swedish self-image, that this is a good country, that supposedly there are bad countries and good countries in the Swedish idea of what is good and what is bad, and that Sweden is supposedly a good country, and that in that good country, racism does not exist, sexism does not exist, homophobia does not exist, transphobia, exactly. So I think for Black people, the ways how anti-Blackness in Swedish context looks like, it starts in the language already, meaning we can't even express our opinions without being questioned at all times. It starts there.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I want to go back a little bit. Some of, like, when, where were you born? Tell us a little bit about your background. Give us the journey a little bit.
So I am born and raised in Ethiopia, in northern Ethiopia, in a,
The other Habesha.
The domination.
Yes. Let him know.
I'm born and raised in Gondar, actually.
Oh, wow. I've been to Gondar.
Oh, wow.
Amazing place.
Yeah. So much history.
Yeah, it's a lot of history. And I'm lived there until, I mean, I lived in Addis as well, but mainly in Gondar. And Addis is one of my hearts, my favorite cities, just to be, because I mean, it's my home, but also it's a crazy ass town that I really love doing crazy shit in. And I will tell you more about it, that I can't do those things anymore because of the queer aspects, but I will tell you, I will go there. And we moved to Sweden 20 years ago, approximately. So I grew up in Ethiopia, moved to Sweden. So my first encounter, I guess, in this dichotomy of like white versus black kind of thing, when you live in Ethiopia or in sub-Saharan Africa, you don't think that you're black. You're black. Of course you're black. Mm-hmm. That's nothing. Yeah. You know, that's
everybody's black.
Everything, your doctor is black. Everything you see is like, right, you know, like, so it's like, you're brown. Everybody's like, so the first, I didn't quite understand as a 13 going 14 years old. I've heard about like history, you know, like kind of like we watched Roots thing. I didn't really grasp racism would be that up in my face in a way that was, I didn't really understand why would these white people think they're better than me, kind of, you know, that 14 years old me was trying to figure out that out when we moved to Sweden. Because I really did not, you know, coming from, especially also like coming from Ethiopia, it's really like a country that really like lives off like in a just like pride of the black people kind of like, I like, you know, point of view. So I really was like trying to like, what is going on? Why is this inferior complex comes from, or, you know, superior complex and et cetera, et cetera. So we moved to Sweden and it was the strangest thing. I had to learn Swedish and it was, wow, this weird ass language that I was like, I'm never going to learn this language.
And did you move to Stockholm, Samuel?
Stockholm, yeah. Prior to me and my sister in Stockholm. So it was, I only lived in Stockholm and Sweden. And now thinking about it, I would not have lived anywhere else in Sweden. In Hässelby, to be specific, in Vällingby, Hässelby.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if you know it.
XXFM.
XXFM, yes!
Well, of course we know it. Of course we know it, brother. Of course we know it, my man.
Yeah. And, you know, it was strange in the beginning, adjusting to this new space. But then I mean, within like the first few years, I really, really, really tried to make it like my home, my place, my, you know, learning Swedish and just trying to be like a part of it. Cause I felt like I'm, you know, now we live here, we moved here. So I might as well just be a part of this society. So I was, when I was 16, 17, I went back to visit grandma in Ethiopia. And it was a powerful journey, just, you know, just missing grandma, but also missing Ethiopia and just the people and the place. I went there and it was such an experience. You know, you're still an ideal person, but then, you know, young and ideal and naive, kind of like 17 years old, thinking, wow, I see the world in a different way. You kind of like try to figure out like the politics of the countries, what is going on, what is happening, et cetera, et cetera. So in Sweden, when I came back after visiting, I started to try to be engaged in different organizations, just trying to be a part of society because I really had, I come from a certain family that was really politically active, but also that there was always the will of change in like the idea that we can change stuff was not far from my head. So I did believe in that. So I started to be engaged in different organizations and I started to miss black people in Stockholm. I was like, where are we at? Because I see us, you know, when we move around in the suburbs, I know we're there, but when in these kind of organizations, in our, in the arts, especially where I was really much interested in, and cultural events that are not just cultural events like, you know, Habesha nights or stuff, like just like generally in the city, like where we are.
Hey, don't talk that bad about Habesha nights. Hey.
No, I love our Habesha nights. I love Habesha nights. Yeah. I'm the queen of Habesha nights. How dare you? no, but it was like seeing the discourse of the, you know, different organizations, platforms, political groups and stuff, et cetera, et cetera. That I started to like I know we're out here. I live among black people in the suburbs. Like, I know where we at though. So that kind of like loneliness really had a longing to find other like black folks who want to do stuff. Later, like much later, like when we were like in our 20s, and I started to become like in different separatist kind of organizations that were really about like social justice organizations or social justice groups. And, you know, we were talking about reading, you know, Fanon and Davis, you know, like just like thinking about like how class in our suite, especially because a lot of us were organizing were with parents with migrant backgrounds, also migrated to Sweden, that the class issue was really important for us, because we were, for the first time, experiencing the class aspect of, you know, having people, our friends, white friends, who are middle class or who inherit middle classness, and then we come and hang out, and you know, that little clash, that was so interesting, because it's really a clash, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We talk about that. Jason and I talk about class and cultural identity constantly, and it's something that, you know, is, for an adopted person, you enter middle class, but you lose your culture. So as an adopted, I was always jealous of the immigrants, because they always had culturally, you know, when we went to the Habesha night, I looked like the Swede in the corner, and it's always this back and forth between class and culture.
Tell us a bit about how Black Queer Sweden came about. How did you start, and where are you with that now?
Yeah, so I mean, in these social justice groups that we were, you know, we were hungry for change, or we were hungry for to be heard, to be listened, to organize. And that hunger was like, you know, we would create events, evenings, and discuss. And as a queer person, who, as a Black gay man, I had not yet, you know, or often in these spaces, I did not come out. I did not dare to come out. So I really felt like I was also not, you know, completely 100% myself. And thinking also like in different social justice groups that I was a part of, that were really, the discourse or the languages were really like really male dominated and really masculine, really in a way that was toxic. And because let's be honest, when we cis men hang out, we dominate everything in a way, in a discourse, and we take over. So there was a movement called Black Coffee. I don't know if you heard about it. That was coming up in Stockholm, Sweden, and just generally across the whole of Sweden. That was a separatist Black-only platform. And I was a part of the... literally, it was a Facebook group that blew up to like this massive, gigantic platform that we didn't really, you know, like everybody was hungry for that. Like a lot of Black people, like in Umeå or in Malmö and Göteborg, everywhere were like joining the group and like, oh shit, I thought I was alone with this experience, because people started to post like, this happened to me. So I thought I was just losing my mind, or I thought this, because it's a part of the Swedish identity that tells Black people that our experiences are individual and not structural, right? You kind of accept that when you're alone, you kind of freak out. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, this is maybe just, you know, it happens, bad apples every now and then, not structural thing. So in this Black Coffee group, the discourse was just, I think the first wave of that was just the healing of just talking about your experiences, our experiences. And then in that group, finding other Black queer people was just the best thing ever. So when we started it, Juliet Tato and myself, we found each other and we found other Black queer people, right? Mm-hmm. And we were like, our experiences were just, you know, we were talking to each other. In the beginning, it was just confirming each other, affirming each other, loving each other, and just talking to each other. And knowing that within the queer community, even the white queers are not always our allies. There's so much racism within white LGBTQ community, just as much racism within the white LGBTQ community. So dealing with that, you know, because just because we are also queer, we get to share that, you know, experience, and we are always at the front lines, but then we also experience that within our own community. So we kind of felt like, oh my God, to have each other's backs were so amazing. So the point of Black Queers became a safe space And sometimes the most revolutionary thing we do is meet up, go to the beach, swim, hang out. That's it. And talk. That is just so like healing, taking care of each other, affirming each other. But we have also, in previous years, we organized Pride events. Last year, we organized Afro Pride in Stockholm at Trädgården.
I wanted to ask you about Pride coming up in Sweden. And obviously, it's a celebration. And how are you getting ready for Pride? And secondary, will there be gay Pride in Ethiopia?
It's Pride Week in Stockholm now. And because of COVID, the majority of the events, I think all of the actual like official Pride events are online events, which, you know, we can't do anything about it until the vaccine is here. So this year, it's the way I see Pride, we're just going to, you know, take it as it comes because of COVID-19. We're going to there'll be some online things we would individually participate in, but gearing up just in our writing processes. We are both, Juliet, the other co-founder, is an amazing writer and playwright. I write a lot myself, but so I think we gear up our activisms in expressive ways in our art nowadays. We put it in our arts. And then next year we're going to kick ass when hopefully we get to have a reunion of humankind and hug each other. Oh, just to tell you, we recently had a very beautiful thing called Horn of Africa Pride online on Zoom like this and on Facebook Live. Wow. That was organized by a queer activist from Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Somalia. That was just amazing. It was online. Yeah, it was beautiful. And it was 7,000 people on Facebook were watching it. And it was beautiful. And a lot of them in Addis and in Asmara. Wow. Yeah, so that was, you know, lovely. But just thinking about how far Ethiopia, to be honest with you, Marcus, regarding to that question, unfortunately, it's very far. It's very far. It's going to take something drastic, which we are doing now. We are collecting narratives. We are collecting histories. We are collecting ourselves and we are organizing. We're not at all going to give up. But Pride in Ethiopia, I believe it will happen. I would like to see it in my lifetime. I would love to go to a Pride event in Addis in my lifetime.
Can I just go back a little bit? Being Ethiopian, I've gone to Ethiopia many times and have family there. I can't tell you how big it is to have an Habesha come out, right? That is, you know, I'm proud of Ethiopia of so many different things, but I'm not proud of how the space that we have not created for the LGBTQ community. And so to have someone that is vocal and talk about it. So I just want to go back a little bit. So you did not come out. So in your teens and early 20s, you were just dating women then.
Yeah. And I was also, when I came out, I did not come out publicly. I came out very like selectively. So to protect, you know, myself and also the ability to go back to Ethiopia as many times as possible. Interestingly enough, when I did come out in the steps that I did secretly and very compartmentalized safe spaces, just like a few friends, in Ethiopia, I met till this day, some of my best friends, queer activists that no longer are, unfortunately, in Addis anymore because they had to escape. They had to literally flee for their lives. But we met when, like, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we met in Addis and we were like, oh my God, we exist. We exist. Because you kind of feel, especially like, okay, first in Swedish context, I was like, okay, I'm a black gay man. I know that. I'm a black queer man. I know that. But as a Habesha, I thought like, I'm probably the only one. Yeah. That was like my, you know, thing. And then coming out in the Habesha community, as you know, Marcus said, it is not I mean, I still to this day get the comments, the hate mails, the threat, and I mean, for me, that is
from other Ethiopians.
Yeah, from other Habeshas, and yeah. It's nothing to me because I'm in my safety. I know myself. I know what I want. I know my activism. I know where I stand at. But for the so many Ethiopians and Eritreans who are LGBTQI people, that is just the fear is tremendous.
How is it for you when you travel to Addis now, even though, you know, you have come out in a Swedish context, but I'm guessing that in an Ethiopian context, it's very different.
So this is what happened. a few years ago, some of my dear friends who are vocal and amazing and my heroes, activists, they were outed on a local newspaper in Addis. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really horrible. And then also targeting others there. So there was this really horrific, just a wave of homophobic attacks. And during that, I was also outed on some big platform.
Somebody wrote on the internet about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't mind that. It was just like, I kind of lost Ethiopia for a while, which I do now, because I don't dare to go.
But you can't go.
No, I can't. Yeah. And it's fucking sad because I love being there, but also one of the most traumatic experiences to me happened last year when my grandma that I grew up with passed away and I couldn't even go to the funeral.
Yeah.
And bury her, which is like the only thing I wanted to do. So the idea, like, you know, being vocal as a Habesha queer and the losses we do, the losses we gain or the losses we experience. And we always talk about it. I mean, we cry about it. Mm. We do bunna ceremonies and we cry about it. You know, we missed it. But it's also like where I am in my life, I'd rather be vocal and lose something than, you know, for that silent 16-year-old that I was, you know, that I owe to that. I owe to everybody that needs to hear my voice, our voices. So it's difficult. A lot of my friends have lost more than just, you know, I mean, their lives to this. And I do feel I want to see more support from Black men, hetero Black men, to our Black queer community, especially Black trans community. As you probably know, Marcus, in the United States, in New York, you know, Black trans women are being murdered in an alarming rate. Fortunately, these are often murdered by other Black men, cis Black men. And so that is something really, I would like to point at is what I would love to see would be a vocal support from Black men, a vocal support from Black hetero men to our Black queer siblings. In Swedish newspaper Expressen, the co-founder of Black Queers Sweden, Juliette Atto, wrote today an article in Swedish about Black Lives Matter that is created by women, it's created by Black queer women, and the importance that pretty much all movements that bring about change have always been led by Black women, by Black queer, by people, by Black trans women. Mm-hmm. And that the amount of price that is being paid is, you know, is not even proportional to the amount of attention they are getting. So that I would like to really just really shout out to that.
But Samuel, tell us, not just in an Ethiopian context, but also just in a global context, and educate us a bit, what can the support, I mean, Marcus and I are two hetero Black men, what can our support look like for you? Like, how can we support you?
Now, to be honest, the support is a beautiful thing and it looks different. It doesn't always have to be vocal. It can be contributions to relief forms. It can be contributions to trans groups. Just donating money really would help. And not just in the Ethiopian context, as you said, in just generally in Black queer groups. They are in the United States, in Sweden, everywhere. If we think about the hierarchies of society, the people that are the worst at the bottom are always Black people. And in the Black people, within the Black community, it's always Black queer people, Black trans people that are at the bottom. But support could also look like by being vocal against misogyny, against Black women, but also against homophobia and transphobia, really vocal support, really. That would shut down a lot of voices, really. Because seeing support, like just sharing a post or sharing somebody's amazing story or something, that to lend a voice is a really good support, to be a voice like, oh, there are this person, they are here and they are doing this, hear them out, you can do this. That is a support.
Well, you have this moment and you can always come on, and if you have something for us to share, we would love to put it up on our Facebook or our Instagram.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Can I ask you a question? So the gay rights movement in Ethiopia is predominantly underground, right? How far do you think Ethiopia or Africa, or is there an African country that we can look at for an example? And how far is Ethiopia, do you think, from allowing, having been open-minded enough to having an open movement?
There is a network of African queer activists that are really amazing and really coordinating. Just even the visibility aspect is important, to be visible so that there's power in that, right? To know that there are others out there. So that a lot of the times queer people in Ethiopia or on the continent feel they are alone and that they are the only ones. But in terms of how far or which countries we can look at, I mean, I look at how activists have worked in Uganda, in Kenya, just which are the pretty, by approximately, our closest, right? Kenya's our neighbor, but Uganda is close. So there are open activists there, but they are also paying huge prices.
A high price.
Just recently, the Kenyan queer activists tried to, I don't know if you know that, to repeal this colonial law that is the law that was called, the appeal was called Repeal 162, which forbids homosexuality in Kenya, which is a colonial law, but that was just like, you know, from the British colonial rule. And just that, and just that is amazingness that they challenged that in the Kenyan Supreme Court to, they lost the appeal, but just the fact that they went all the way there is something I look at like super, like tremendous. I mean, South Africa is a great example, but it's it has also a complete different history that is, you know, different, but it's another role model. So there are other African countries.
I think that also in the African countries I've been to, like Congo, for example, to me, the connection to colonialism and homophobia in Africa was so obvious to me that, you know, Christian missionaries, they're anti-abortion, they're homophobic. There's a set of values that was sold to and convinced and pushed as a part of the colonial package, but that goes on still today.
Oh yeah, that's completely, it's also fed by, especially from the American and Western right-wing preachers, that they do finance these, you know, mega meetings, mega churches that are really just, just spewing out all of this hate just in directly. That is really like a continuum of both the colonial history, but a continuum of like how those two are interlinked, right? So in Ethiopian context, which is so interesting, this tremendous homo and transphobia that is so astonishing. It's up in your face and it's really violent and has always fascinated me because I like, what is this country is afraid of, truly? What is this country is afraid that gay people would do? What is that? And I come from, you know, my generation, I am in my 30s. Like the generation, the majority of Ethiopia is, I think, my generation and younger, which is, you know, it's a young nation. So that the drive of, like, you know, the tiredness really is visible. Like, just like young people are fed up, like tired of just, and then also having access to another world through internet and seeing what is possible to have, what kind of discourses to have, what kind of discussions to be able to have. And I mean, people are really fed up. So that's something I just pick up on. But I'm also super disappointed in the violence against queer people in Ethiopia. And I miss Ethiopia very much, but so that I shut down that part of me because I miss it every day. I miss Ethiopia every day.
Can I ask you, this is a super personal question. If you don't want to answer it, we cut it out, right? But can you just slow this down for me? Because I think there's a lot of power here. And I think there's a lot of people that has a challenging conversation, and particularly in our community, in Black community, in Habesha community. How do I go to my parents, right? So can you slow down and just walk us through? Here's the day when you decide to tell your mother, come out.
I came out first to my sister when I was 16. And then I told her, like, it's only to her that I would tell my mom later when I know more. Because at 16, I definitely thought I was bisexual. Just, you know, like, the fear of losing family, the fear of not knowing my queerness. Just that was, you know, traumatic as it was. And it was really heavy. And I love my mom so much. And I think I was 21. And I had made 22, sorry, 22. Yeah, I remember that. And I had made the conversation in my head several times how the outcome would look like, different outcomes. And I know it's, you know, coming out is also like there's always a beautiful story around it, but it's a painful story as well. So I always tell people, you don't always even have to come out to the people that you think will hurt you the most. You just come out to those who will love you the most. And first, to gain strength, then you come out, right? Come out to the people that you know will love you regardless. Then you gain that a little, like, you know, support. You know you can fall back. You know you have. So coming out to mom was like, I went to my mom and I sat her down at McDonald's, of all places. And we were having a conversation. And the tea here is that another Habesha person has saw me kissing some random dude somewhere and have told. So I heard it myself that, you know how the Habesha phones work. So it had spread like. So I already heard it before mom heard it. And I was like, for the first time, I remember like not caring because I was like always been so afraid on my shoulders that I carry a massive weight on my shoulders. It's so heavy. So I just felt like, oh my God, I can't do this. I have had tough teen years where I thought I was going to lose my mind, you know. So now I was just like done. So I kind of made the conversation in my mind, in my head, prior, and then we sat down and it was the most difficult thing to say. So I said, I know you heard that I kissed a man and I just wanted to let you know that it's true. And the thing was, I remember like thinking like, oh my God, and I didn't even like the guy. I was just, you know, whatever.
stop. In Swedish, in Tigrinya, Amarinya, in English, like what I need details.
Oh yeah, I'm good. It was Amarinya. I said, Amarinya tsamalle?
No, very yellam.
Yellam. And Bamarinya, in Amharic, I said, what you heard was right. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm so afraid. But by that point, and this is a sad, sad point, I had made up my mind, had my mom not accepted me at that point, I was already going to say, like, at McDonald's, okay, I love you, but goodbye. I am in my 20s. I can handle myself. I live by myself. So, you know, like, I was already, you know, adulting, however that is done in your 20s. So I already like kind of like made that, and it's no kid should ever have to do that with their parents. It's not an easy conversation, but no kid should ever fear to lose the love of their parents or the acceptance of their parents. And then my mom was sweet, beautiful as she is, and everything is cool and brilliant as she is. She's like, I don't care. I love you anyways, you know. And it was really emotional, and we ate at McDonald's, and then I went home.
Wow. That is by far the most beautiful story involving McDonald's.
Yeah. With McDonald's at Lily
Word. Word.
But thank you so much for sharing that with us, Samuel.
Well, I think it's fascinating. When you started this, you talked about you come from a lineage of activists and politicians, and what comes out of this conversation, I understand now when you said you're tired, because you really are carrying two journeys that are in a pivotal moment right now, right? So obviously you're driving an activism around Black Lives Matters in Sweden, and then also around the LGBTQ community. And so maybe you are the politician and the activist that you're family comes from. It just looks 30 years later, it just looks like this. And that's fantastic. Have you ever thought about that? You know, I know that my father was a tribe leader in Ethiopia. So I always think about that when I'm tired. So you know what would my dad do? And it gives me a little bit injection of, although the tribe was small and it was in the countryside. I think about a lot with Jason's, you know, Jason's father is an activist and driving force for me in so much of, he's a driving force of this moment, actually, in many ways. And so I hear it when Jason speaks, I hear his father in many ways, you know, although it's a different way.
I mean, for me, everything that I learn and everything that I know comes from Black women. My grandma being the first. And literally, like, the idea of what love can look like comes from my grandma, like a really caring love that she had, a really radical caring love that she carried my life with. I was a spoiled brat, you know, growing up, but I was only spoiled with love. That was the only thing I, like, you know, love was, I was fed with love. I was so, but also in my life and as an adult, everything that I know about radical love of community comes from Black women, comes from the Black queer women that I have read, the Black trans women that I have, you know, everybody that has inspired me. Very few men in my life have inspired me, and I'm very happy about that. I'm not sad about that, but it's sad because it says something about the discourse. But needless to say, I agree with you, Marcus, that when I think about like where I am and what where I come from, that I always go back to, I see myself in this city of, you know, Black gay man in Stockholm, but also I'm Ethiopian and a queer in an Ethiopian context, in a Habesha context, what that looks like in the within the community, and then and somehow navigating these different rooms, how I navigate, how I camouflage. I no longer do that anymore. You know, the way I see like how my strength have evolved, that I'm the same person in all of these rooms. And that is really a product of radical love that I have been, you know, that I have around me. As I mentioned, you know, Juliet Atta, who's a friend of mine and the co-founder, but also the Black women that we have, you know, I mean, just the other one behind me, Angela Davis, just to, you know, the people we read are those I look at and I really just move on and I just continue. And I'm super tired. I'm done in many ways, but I will never, ever, ever not give up.
Springboarding from that thought, what do you think the coming months, the rest of 2020 look for you in this, and these parallel struggles or intertwined movements and or this one movement that has several arms for you looks like? Do you, for example, feel that things are... Are we moving the needle in Sweden, just to put it more precisely?
Good question. We have always done that. It's just that I think the ways we have looked at validation has made us look as if we have not moved the needle. So I think we need to stop looking at white gaze, the white point of view, to get that validation. What we have already done, that we have moved the needle far beyond. It's just that I think we seek the validation of the the majority whiteness that we have always, you know, have we done right? Did we move right? Did we do it the right way? Kind of. So I think we need to step away from that point of view a lot more. We have each other. We are enough for each other. So for me, the coming weeks, months, years is going to be focusing on Black art, Black films. I work at Cinema Africa Film Festival, which is, you know, African and African diaspora, Black films, you know, that's a home where we curate films around the topics that are our lives, around our lives. I have a son who is 11. I think about how I should protect his happiness, his joy, his Blackness, his everything without putting the whole world on his shoulders. And that I can only do through art, through, you know, what just moving myself from the white validation that we no longer need.
Well, we want to say thank you so much, Samuel Germa. Where can people find you? What's your Instagram? So, you know, hopefully you can pick up some followers because your conversation is so valid.
Oh, my Instagram is, yeah. I literally created Instagram a month ago, I think, or 2 months ago. So I'm a late bloomer. But it's called at the Fab Blackness, obviously.
All right. Thank you so much, Samuel, for coming on, sharing your stories, enlightening us, and sharing your energy. And also, you know, good luck in these movements that, of course, we're also a part of, but that you are, you know, a pioneer of in Sweden, and I'm sure in the future in Ethiopia also.
And I've, you know, on behalf of Mohammed, I only have one request after this. Two, actually. Next time Mohammed throws a party, can you please come? Because that's like what he said, like, when you throw a party, you just want Samuel Girma to show up. Yeah. Can you please?
I will come. I promise. Right. I wish.
That's a promise. It's official. That's,
listen, if you do not find me at work, if you do not find me with my son, you will most likely find me at the party. Okay?
No excuses, Samuel.
Okay. That's and official. Then the last request is just a two. Can you just say, I'm Samuel Girma, you're listening to this moment, please?
Okay, I'll say them both. My name is Samuel Girma, and you're listening to this moment. So me, Samuel Girma, no. የምትሰሙት አሁን ይሄ this moment ነው.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Samuel.
Thank you.
This moment is produced by Mohammed El Abed. It's an Acast recording and can be heard on all platforms. So stay tuned. More depth coming your way soon.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.